This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Marla Van. ForbiddenDragon.blogspot.com. Imagination gone wrong. Spring had come once more to Green Gables, the beautiful, capricious, reluctant Canadian spring, lingering along through April and May in a succession of sweet, fresh, chilly sunsets and miracles of resurrection and growth. The maples in Lover's Lane were red-budded, and little curly ferns pushed up around the dryad's bubble. Away up in the barrens, behind Mr. Silas Sloan's place, the mayflowers blossomed out. Pink and white stars of sweetness under the brown leaves. All the schoolgirls and boys had one golden afternoon gathering them, coming home in the clear echoing twilight with arms and baskets full of flowery spoil. I'm so sorry for people who live in lands where there are no mayflowers, said Anne. Diana says perhaps there's something better, but there couldn't be anything better than mayflowers, could there, Marilla? And Diana says that they don't know what they are like, they don't miss them, but I think that is the saddest thing of all. I think it would be tragic, Marilla, not to know what mayflowers are like and not to miss them. Do you know what I think mayflowers are, Marilla? I think they must be the souls of the flowers that died last summer, and this is their heaven. But we had a splendid time today, Marilla. We had our lunch down in a big mossy hollow by an old well. Such a romantic spot. Charlie Sloan dared Artie Gillis to jump over it, and Artie did because he wouldn't take a dare. Nobody would in school. It is very fashionable to dare. Mr. Phillips gave all the mayflowers he found to Percy Andrews, and I heard him say he speaks to the sweet. He got that out of a book, I know, but it shows he has some imagination. I was offered some mayflowers too, but I rejected them with scorn. I can't tell you the person's name because I have vowed never to let it cross my lips. We made a wreath of the mayflowers and put them on our hats, and when the time came to go home, we marched in procession down the road 2 by 2 with the bouquets and wreaths hanging my home on the hill. Oh, it was so thrilling, Marilla. All of Mr. Silas Sloan's folks rushed out to see us, and everybody we met on the road stopped and stared after us. He made a real sensation. Now such wonder, such silly doings, was Marilla's response. After the mayflowers came the violets, and Violet's veil was empurpled with them. eyes as if she trod on holy ground. Somehow, she told Diana, when I'm going through here, I don't really care whether anybody gets ahead of me in class or not. When I'm up in school, it's all different and I care as much as ever. There's such a lot of different ends in me. I sometimes think that is why I'm such a troublesome person. If I was just the one end, it would be ever so much more comfortable. But then it wouldn't be half so interesting. One June evening, when the orchards were pink blossoming again, when the frogs were singing silvery sweet in the marshes above the head of the lake of shining waters, and the air was full of the savor of clover fields and balsamic fir woods, Anne was sitting by her gable window. She had been studying her lessons, but it had grown too dark to see the book, so she had fallen into wide-eyed reverie, looking out past the boughs of the Snow Queen, once more bestarred with its tufts of blossom. In all essential respects, the little gable chamber was unchanged. The walls were as white, the pincushion as hard, the chairs as stiffly and yellowly upright as ever. Yet the whole character of the room was altered. It was full of a new, vital, pulsing personality that seemed to pervade it and to be quite independent of schoolgirl books and dresses and ribbons, and even of the cracked blue jug full of apple blossoms on the table. It was as if all the dreams, sleeping and waking, of its vivid occupant had taken a visible, although unmaterial, form, and had tapestried the bare room with splendid filmy tissues of rainbow and moonshine. Presently, Marilla came briskly in with some of Anne's freshly ironed school aprons. She hung them over a chair and sat down with a short sigh. She had had one of her headaches that afternoon, and although the pain had gone, she felt weak and tuckered out, as she expressed it. Anne looked at her with eyes limpid with sympathy. I do truly wish I could have had the headache in your place, Marilla. I would have endured it joyfully for your sake. I guess you did your part in attending to the work and letting me rest, said Marilla. You seem to have got on fairly well and made fewer mistakes than usual. Of course, it wasn't exactly necessary to starch Matthew's handkerchiefs, and most people, when they put a pie in the oven to warm up for dinner, take it out and eat when it gets hot instead of leaving it to be burned to a crisp. But that doesn't seem to be your way, evidently. Headaches always left Marilla somewhat sarcastic. Oh, I'm so sorry, said Anne pensively. So that's how I came to forget the pie. I didn't know I starched the handkerchiefs. All the time I was ironing, I was trying to think of a name for a new island Diana and I had discovered up by the brook. It's the most ravishing spot in the river. There are two maple trees on it, and the brook flows right around it. At first it struck me that it was splendid to call it Victoria Island because we found it on the Queen's birthday. Both Diana and I are very loyal. But I'm sorry about that pie and the handkerchiefs. I wanted to be extra good today because it's an anniversary. Do you remember what happened this day last year, Marilla? No. No, I can't say I'm sorry, said Marilla, who sometimes wondered how she could have lived before Anne came to Green Gables. No, not exactly sorry. If you finished your lesson, Anne, I want you to run over and ask Mrs. Barry if she'll lend me Diana's apron pattern.
Oh, it's too dark, cried Anne.
Too dark? Why, it's only twilight, and goodness knows you've gone over often enough after dark.
I'll go early in the morning, said Anne eagerly. I'll get up at sunrise and go over, Marilla.
What has gotten into your head now, Anne Shirley? I want You know, Charlie Sloan's grandmother wouldn't tell a story for anything. She's a very religious woman. And Mrs. Thomas's father was pursued home one night by a lamb of fire with his head cut off, hanging by a strip of skin. He said he knew it was the sight of his brother, and that it was a warning.
White thing. When she finally stumbled
Milo.